I'm Mark.
I'm Bri.
I'm Kyle.
And this is Zero Issues. So,
here we are.
Here we are, once again.
Hello.
We're out of the basement.
Yeah, we are on, if we look out the window, we can see things.
We actually have a window.
There's a window, and it's big, and there's stuff outside.
Mom's out of town, we're having a party!
Woo!
Yeah.
I need popcorn!
It's a popcorn party!
Yay! Pajamas!
I'm gonna
Everyone looks around awkwardly. Oh, I didn't bring pajamas.
I didn't even think I planned for
you,
that at all.
You've got denim pajamas?
I sleep in the nude. Oh, this is awfully awkward.
I do always carry a second pair of underwear.
I feel like Jay Leno probably has denim pajamas.
I wear two pairs of underwear at the same time.
One on each leg.
One on each leg.
That's how it works, right?
Yeah.
Well, you don't wear one over the other. I mean, that would be absurd. Think of the bikini line. Think of it.
The tan lines are horrible.
Can't stop now.
Because it's all you wear. I'm just mowing my lawn.
So, hey, we're already off the rails.
That's fine. That's why we're here.
Yep.
So this episode is what?
What is this episode?
We literally just came up with...
That's a good question.
Like, this is how prepared we are. I believe this time we are talking about stories that were kind of game changers. They kind of sort of changed the direction of maybe, I don't know about the whole industry necessarily.
Industry, but, or just introduced something new or a different slant, and that affected that company itself and other companies, I would think. Like, that reflected, and then maybe other companies... answered in a certain way or had their own slant on that sort of story, realizing that's a major milestone or something interesting to do that hasn't been done before.
Basically, the ones that flicked that first domino, I guess.
And then everybody copied that shit ever since.
Yeah, which always goes well.
And it's gotten to the point where they're staples of the industry. It's like, well, yeah, of course you're going to do the dark future story because... why wouldn't you? Everyone's done that a million times before. But somebody did first.
It's true.
There are a few. Do we even need to say some of them and even go into, like, there's probably half a dozen we could just say and eliminate.
Sure.
Yeah.
Eliminate and then just go on to the other ones. Because everybody talks about them and everybody knows
about
them.
We should say
them. And we've mentioned them. Well, we'll mention them.
But we don't have to get into depth.
Yeah.
You know, like,
let's go into the other ones.
We don't really need to spend 20 minutes talking about Days of Future Past because I'm pretty sure that's been covered.
Yeah, Days of Future Past, I would say, Watchmen? Do we need to talk about it?
No one's talked about Watchmen before.
No, well, that's what I mean. Everybody's talked about like that.
Yeah.
Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
Although we may need to talk about the context of how they were game changers and how it was affected.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I thought I turned my ringer off.
Bri keeps opening treasure chests.
My parents are right now in Toronto. They just saw Lewis Black.
Oh, cool.
Perform. So my mom just sent me a text that says, Lewis Black was, all caps, awesome. So, I guess they enjoyed him.
Your mom's pretty hip.
She is that.
She's a hip lady.
Yep.
So what,
Sorry.
Shit.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Sometimes you get a text in the middle of a recording.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's fair. What do you want to talk about first? What one do you think is a standout thing that was a game changer? Maybe not, like, on the level of Watchmen. Like, there's Watchmen and Dark Knight Returns.
Those are,
like, industry-wide game changers. And then there's lesser ones that still took it up a notch.
Excuse me.
What?
I'm looking at the stack of books that we are currently using to
to prop everything up.
To prop up the sound effects machine. and the microphone. No, it's a sound
effects. The sound effects.
It's true, yeah.
So it's the fun remote control that girl had in iCarly. Look, I've got a child. She watches horrible shows. But
you have an excuse. That's good.
However you want to explain it.
I want to talk Kingdom Come.
You want to talk Kingdom Come?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. It was like,
and why did you bring that up?
Because we've got all of Universe X and all of Paradise X in front of us. No Earth X, but that's okay.
It's somewhere.
It's around.
I like how Volume 1 of Paradise X has, like, a Volume Number 1, and then Volume 2 has Roman Numeral 2.
Well, if you look at the Universe X ones,
yeah,
they've got the Roman Numeral.
It depends on which series.
Printing. Yeah, it's a different printing. I know, but I like to think that you're missing Volumes 2 through 10. Because Paradise X went on forever.
Earth X, Paradise X, that was kind of Marvel's answer to Kingdom Come.
Right.
But why do you think Kingdom Come was a game changer?
Well, I think that was Alex Ross's first big thing, was it not?
Nope.
No?
Marvel's.
Oh, yeah, there was Marvel's.
Marvel's was before. Okay, yeah. I didn't realize that.
It did at that, yeah.
And it was a better book, I think, than Kingdom Come.
Really? You think
yeah,
so?
Yeah.
I don't know. I see them as pretty on par with each other. Like, two totally different approaches.
It's really night and day. Yeah. But
I feel maybe him sort of drawing. Alex Ross has a very kind of like, I think it's kind of a very nostalgic kind of style.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So something about him doing a story that's about the past seems a great fit as opposed to, like, something that's in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can sort of see that.
Something where, and not to say anything bad about Alex Ross, but...
No.
It was Kurt Busiek.
Kurt Busiek.
How do you say his last name?
Busiek? I don't know.
You know, Kurt.
Kurt,
you know our buddy. Yeah. Kurt. Hey, Kurt. Kurt's a listener.
He's got to be, right?
He is now.
We're gonna tag him in the. Yep. if he searches for himself on Tumblr, he's gonna find him.
I mean, who doesn't? Who doesn't?
Well, yeah.
But I thought they did that future in an interesting way. You know, the different factions that were at play there. And really, just sort of
the old guard versus the new guard.
Yeah, and. Yeah. The shitting all over of the 90s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like,
take that, Cable.
Yeah. Like, let's make this guy look like the 90s.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's just do Cable and also give him horns.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, again, I did appreciate that. I appreciated that more as time went on, because it's one of those ones where I'll reread it every so often.
Yeah.
I got it in...
I think both of those I will reread every so often. Like, you said that Ross has that kind of...
It
lends Norman itself Rockwell. To an older style. But yeah, I think it lends itself well to Marvel's because Marvel's is a street level, normal person viewpoint looking up at these things that, oh my God, what is just, there's a guy climbing on a wall. Oh my God, there's somebody with wings and just somebody shooting lasers out of their eyes. And it's just from that guy's viewpoint. And it works really well because, totally Rockwell
because
viewpoint of an everyday man. And it's the hyper realism. We'd never seen that in comics before.
Right.
That was like,
so, I mean, he does, like, crazy. Again, does very, like, kind of imposing, very well, you know, like, really beautiful superheroes. Render piece, yeah. But, I mean, again, they have that realistic look to them where it's sort of like, if you were, like, looking up at legitimately, like, a god or something, you know what I mean? Like, it gets that across really well. So, that's sort of the thing. I think it's very well suited
for Marvel. He uses models for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
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 And, in fact, Kingdom Come, I think I got it... I forget what grade I was in. I was in high school. Somebody gave me the trade paperback for my birthday, I think. And it's one of those ones where, again, like, I flip through it, like, constantly, just, like, looking through, they had stuff in the back, like, back matter and stuff, showing, like, pictures, like, photos that he, you know, like, his models and stuff that he based things on and the poses and stuff like that from Kingdom Come there. And it was, I mean, it's one of those ones where you can kind of just go through and just look really, really carefully in, like, backgrounds and stuff, and there's so much
detail. But he works absolutely huge. He did, it's not 11 by 17. He's working on enormous poster board, like, or I don't think it's canvas, it's like Masonite or something of that sort, and it's, like, they're in...
He works on amber.
on the tip of a pencil.
He uses mosquitoes.
I have the Alex Ross mythology book, like the big hardcover collection, and kind of retrospect at that point of his work.
That's a classy coffee table
book. It is totally nice, and it shows a lot of like his process and just all the models and that he works in. Like, he uses for Superman. It's his buddy that he uses all the time, right? Because he's just got that.
It must be super cool to be one of those people. Be like, yeah, I'm Superman. I'm Batman.
Yeah,
check it out.
Yeah, and he has done a couple of iconic like shots and pictures that I'm like, that's. I often think for Batman, there's that shot of him. It's a black and white one, and I think it was just like a pinup in a back of an issue somewhere. He has his shirt off, and it's showing his back, and it's all scratched and scarred. And I was like, why have you never seen that before? That is such a cool idea. Like, he would totally be mauled and just, like, one big scar.
Like, Batman fights a cougar, like, I would say 3 times a year.
Or cheetah.
Yeah. Or panther. They're all really the same thing, aren't they?
Yeah.
Big old kitty cats.
Kingdom Come, though, was one, it came out, and I don't, that was at the weird point of me collecting that I was kind of in and out of stuff, and then I picked it up much later, and I was just like, I've missed out on something. Oh my god, what is this? Right. And I had picked up Marvels when it came out, so I knew who he was, but I didn't realize, like, oh, he did something for DC, and then,
oh boy,
I just, like, salivating, like, oh my god, this is amazing.
I think if I had a big problem with how that book looks.
Really?
It's, well, if I had a problem.
Yeah.
And I kind of do.
Just spit it out, man.
Speech bubbles. It looks real weird. Like, we've got this, like, beautifully painted stuff, and what's over top, it's like, you know, standard comic book speech bubbles. It's the weird
thing. Like, and what do you do, though?
That's the sort of thing they were able to do really well in Batwoman, where they sort of incorporated it and they made it look, you know, a little smoother. But it's just like, you know, it's like they took a Picasso and slapped garbage on top of it.
Yeah.
Or big white spots.
Yeah.
That fill up half of the painting.
That's always a weird thing, though. Like, that, you bring that up. I've kind of struggled with that at times, and I'm like, how do you change the format of this set format? Like, you have to do something of that sort. And you've seen different things. You've seen, like, was it Arkham Asylum? Dave McKean?
Yeah.
Grant Morrison? There are word bubbles in there.
Hmm.
And, like, traditional kind of side. But then there are also, like, scratchy word bubbles. Then there's just line to the words sort of thing. Right. So it's over top of the background. And it plays and it changes, and depending on who's talking and what's going on. Yeah. And then that brings in the point of having a good letterer and somebody that actually understands.
Right.
And controls font.
Wait, letterers are important?
Imagine that.
What?
Like, if you're doing something, you know, different stylistically than, like, sort of the norm, then, yeah, you really have to across the board at every level of production have to match that or have it, yeah. And, you know, and I agree with that, because that always sort of seemed kind of, like, again, they could have just, like, lifted those off of just any regular comic page, and it wouldn't be any different at all, so. Yeah.
Lettering by Comic Craft.
Right.
Yeah. That would be a cool book to see, to try to look at a Criterion collection of it. They're like, oh, this is the size of my house.
A Criterion collection.
Or what are the ones that are like full size?
Oh, the artist
edition. Oh, the artist edition. Yeah. Thank Criterion's
the DVDs. Yeah, it's on a
laser disc. I was like, there's a movie? What are we talking
about? Yeah, it's on a laser disc.
It's on a laser disc.
And the laser disc is the size of my house.
Exactly.
And my house is the size of this book.
So, like, the originals for Alex Ross, like, where does he keep those? Does he store them? Where do they store these things?
He has, I've Florida. Seen him.
Yeah.
All of Florida.
It's just, that's
I've seen Florida originals is. For sale, and they're, obviously, they're, like, thousands and thousands.
Oh, God.
Tens of thousands of dollars.
It's like an animation cell with Batman's elbow.
Yeah.
$1,400.
Even the prints, like the high edition prints are, you know, like, you're talking several hundred dollars.
So he's doing all right.
Yeah.
Don't worry about Alex Ross.
He gets to draw Space Ghost all he wants.
Yeah.
but really, he did do that. That was a thing.
Oh, I know.
What else do you think is a game changer beyond those?
Funny enough, not anymore, I guess, but like the Ultimates when it first came along.
Oh, yeah.
It was a game changer at the time. And that's the whole point, is that it was at the time
I meant the Ultimates as in the line. Like Ultimate Spider-Man initially. But the Ultimates itself, I mean, so many elements of that were taken for the cinematic universe.
Right.
Which were then folded kind of into the regular Marvel universe. So it's kind of interesting.
Now it's the status quo, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, even just like the... Like, I feel like S.H.I.E.L.D. feels like it's way more, like, all-encompassing, prevalent now than it was, say, how many years ago?
Oh, even, I would say, 10 to 12 years ago.
Yeah. Again, like, and that was the world that was introduced in the Ultimates, where, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. is everywhere.
Yeah.
And it feels like, you know, since that happened, and since it became so important in the movies, you know, it's all over the place. Like, it's everywhere Marvel Universe.
It was in a more realistic approach of what...
Yeah.
In terms of the characters and the... socio-political kind of thing, where it was, oh, you have a spy agency, what would they be doing? What would, you know, how would they affect and how would people react? And if they had this much power, and there are, like, they had things beyond just what we have in regular day technology.
The Ultimates is one of those comics where, I liked it, if I reread it now, I'm like, oh boy. Like, there's some stuff about it where it's very of its time. Like, it's very, like, you know,
the original Ultimates?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very, like, you know, post-9/11, like, just post-9/11 war on terror era, kind of like, not that that'll ever end. But, it's one of those things, though, that, there are certain elements of that don't age super well, but there's stuff that just, for some reason, clicked and have stuck around since then.
Yeah.
But at the time, that was the game changer, I think, because a lot of it... you need that step up. You need something that says... Okay, we're gonna do this, whether it's more realistically or more gritty or, like, explore things stylistically different. It needs to change, and that's what it did. Partially stylistically, and then just storytelling-wise, was like, okay, you know, we're gonna have these superheroes and how would they function a little bit more in a real world. And then, like you said, that spread to the rest of them. And then...
Right.
Did DC answer that?
I think, just to put that on pause for a second. I think Ultimates itself, like, the Ultimates books, not all of them, the one, cut that part out. Yeah, Ultimates. I think it took a lot of its, sort of approach to storytelling from the Authority, actually.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
oh yeah, we need
to take all these characters and they're, you know, very different, put them together, and make it a, we're not effing around, we've got to fix this problem sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, of course it's, you know, the Authority was, you know, did that, and then the Ultimates was basically like the Marvel version of the Authority kind of a deal. Yeah.
More or less, yeah.
But I mean...
Authority was who? What company?
Wildstorm.
Yeah.
Wildstorm.
Yeah.
And, it came out of Stormwatch, which is now in DC.
Right.
So it's like, oh, cool, I get to see these characters, except they suck now. They're sucking, they're real bad. Don't like them.
I promise this is the only shot I'm taking this episode. Yeah. But you're saying, like, what is their response to the Ultimates from, say, DC? let's see. You have overly designed superhero costumes that are supposed to look more realistic, and all of your superheroes are kind of dickheads? I wonder if we're living in that world right now. I wonder if maybe that's happening. Maybe now. I don't know.
Thanks a lot, Bendis.
Yeah. Well, Mark Miller, but...
Thanks a lot, Miller.
Richards!
Yeah. But, you know, even, like, stylistically, if you look at, like, sort of the designs that a lot of the just Marvel Universe characters have now, they've added a lot more details and stuff like that, and I think that sort of, like, harkens back... I mean, it's maybe more of a response to the movies, but the whole point of the Ultimates was they gave them costumes that...
Made sense?
Yeah, well, that you could see in a movie.
Right.
You could just see, just translated directly into a movie. Like, I would say that the World War II version of Captain America sort of looks, you know, not exactly, but it looked like they took
the
Millar version of the World War II cap as, the basis, sort of, like, the original basis. Look, at Hawkeye's costume in the Avengers movie is, like, the exact same, like, as the one in the Ultimates.
He's got the target on his head and everything.
not that one.
You know what? We talked, a couple episodes ago about, the mask that only shows the hair, like Captain Britain.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like Ultimates 3 Hawkeye.
Ultimates 3... Oh, yeah.
There are no good examples of that costume.
Ultimates 3 Hawkeye, otherwise known as Grifter. but no, like, the Avengers movie, I mean, it's just like, yeah, all they did was turn that red part, like, into, like, a muted purple, basically, yeah. And it's the same costume.
It's too bright.
Yeah. Colors in a superhero costume won't do. We're not getting into this again.
Are we doing this again?
We're not doing it again.
I'll take it outside.
Oh, God. And it's easier to do now because we're on the floor where the doors outside are.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, but that lock's real tricky.
Yeah.
It's real tricky.
I'm the only one that can get it in. Yeah.
Maybe I don't want to fight.
I want to fight you inside. Oh, that's kind of sexual nature.
I assumed it was a Fantastic Voyage sort of thing.
I just watched that like a couple weeks ago, actually.
Really?
I haven't watched it since I was a kid.
I'd like to see a remake of that.
That totally would be an interesting remake, because you would have to change a lot.
They'd get Jason Sudeikis and two other guys, probably.
Yeah.
Okay, Jason Sudeikis, great. Like, you couldn't afford Ed Helms? What's up?
You what? Get Andy Serkis to do the motion capture for all the
animals. I'm a liver! I'm a liver!
Yeah. Yeah. Amoeba! Amoeba! Anyway, what I was going to say with like Ultimates being the game changer and kind of changing things in a way that we were kind of talking about this before we were recording. Talking about reboots and that sort of thing. That, in a way, was a reboot, but it was a different line reboot.
Yeah.
It was okay, we're going to change this. We're going to take these characters and just change them up a little bit and put them in a different context. And
it was like, what if Heroes Reborn wasn't awful?
Yeah, basically.
Let's do Heroes Reborn, and let's do it better this time.
Not that thing hasn't been done before, but there's been far more in terms of reboots and catastrophic changes in comics since, in the past 15 years than there ever had been before.
Some would say cataclysmic changes.
Not to backtrack, but didn't Heroes Reborn Hawkeye just look like brown costume Wolverine?
Yeah, pretty much.
And then Ultimates 3 Hawkeye was just Grifter. What is up with him? You make an alternate version of Hawkeye and he's just some other dude now. Like, completely. Listen, I have opinions about Hawkeye and I'm gonna...
And then he died because he couldn't do that.
My name is Clint. Clint Moondragon.
Moving on.
But I was wondering if, while we were talking about Ultimates, like, in terms of that was kind of a reboot, not a reboot as in, like, you've taken the original line off and redone it, but it's like, oh, you've taken this sideline and created a different course. And then from that, there's been several reboots and changes and whatever, and I'm wondering if that was partially the cause. Like, there's the New 52 and however many other reboots have been in between.
Well,
that.
They did the Earth One books, which I haven't read any of those, but...
In New 52?
Pre-New 52. Okay. The graphic novels that were just like, here's a big Superman story that's supposed to be a new origin, here's a new Batman
thing. Right, okay.
Yeah.
And...
That's a good point. I kind of completely forgot about those, but that does seem like that's what they're trying to do. Again, it's like a separate kind of universe where they can just sort of start over and do whatever they want. I mean, apparently they were pretty successful. I haven't read them. I heard that the Superman ones weren't very good.
I read the first Superman one, and it was not that good.
Yeah, it's...
No, it didn't...
That sounded painful.
It didn't sell me on, I want to read the second volume of this.
You know, but apparently it sold really well.
Well, of course it did.
There's a lot...
Because we're idiots.
Yeah.
We'll buy anything.
Let's not turn this into I get into a fight with Merc episode, but sometimes there's a lot of popular Superman things that I hate, so what are you going to do?
Yeah. Just admit it, you hate him.
Hate Superman?
Yeah.
I want to like him. I really want to.
I have to admit, I think we've talked about this before, I have a hard time with the character of all. It's a hard character to...
Yeah.
Really understand and grasp and do a story long-term with.
Sure.
Because it's...
He's so... really good for short stories, though.
Yeah, he can be.
But then
you end up kind of rehashing the same approach and the same thing, and it's like you can only do so much. And we were talking about this before, where it was we go into the, like, a dark side of it. And you're like, you can't do that. Like, Superman has to be the light. But I'm like, you have to do that in order to contrast taken in that and then to come back into the light. It's gotta have
one or the other. One or the other extreme has no meaning if you don't, if you only live in that spot. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. I only see in red. And it's not shades of red. It's all red.
As he wears his Cyclops. Just take the visor off.
I can't. I'd kill you.
That's true. He would.
I'd kill you.
Pew, pew.
And there's another one, actually, that, now that you mention it. It's sort of a response. I don't know if this is a response to Ultimates exactly, but you think of the All-Star line.
Yeah.
Didn't go as far as it was supposed to. But and that's a good example of what you're saying, too, about a Superman story that's just a self-contained Superman story, which that's one of my favorite comics.
The All-Star.
Is it?
Is it indeed?
I had no idea.
I've talked about it a few times.
Do you have a quote from it?
Like, quite frankly, I didn't know that.
I might have a line from that on my arm. Yeah. Have I mentioned that in the podcast before?
I got it.
That?
No, I feel like it. There should be. Oh,
I didn't
boy.
Want that to be wasted.
He said Frank quietly.
Oh, I said quite frankly.
Damn it.
Anyway.
We got zero issues. Bingo is already well underway.
I want all the ham.
Somebody just won. Wasn't me.
But I mean that and say, you know, like, yeah, and like say Superman Birthright I liked a lot too, which is sort of just a standalone.
I don't know that one. I've heard of it. I've never heard of it though.
It was Mark Waid sort of it was supposed to be like his redone origin.
That was the one with the weird pod, right?
The weird pod?
Didn't it have like a weird birthing pod thing?
It might have. I don't remember those details.
And he hung out with Lex Luthor as a teen. Yeah.
Like, there was, like, one chapter of it.
And then he burned his hair off.
Yeah. Yeah. That happened. It was weird. It was, like, a retelling of the origin that had, like, some aspects of Smallville sort of in there a little bit. And also, you know, weirdly enough, there's some of that.
Well,
that
the burning of the hair, wasn't that like an old?
Oh, yeah, no, that's not what I mean.
I made a joke.
I just meant like
it just wasn't good.
They had. Anyway, either way, it was a retelling of the origin, which was decent, and it was good. I liked it, but it was again, it you know ended up just being a self-contained 12-part story. Superman's pretty good for that. Anyway, moving on
to the next one, I think. Do we have anything else to say about Ultimates?
Not really. I don't think.
Oh, I do have one more thing.
Okay.
We were talking earlier about how a lot of that stuff has sort of been folded into the regular Marvel continuity.
And Nick Fury?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
More seam lines on every costume.
Oh, there's that, yeah.
I think almost as a reaction to that, the Ultimate Universe has become a place where anything can happen at any point, and nobody's safe, and...
And every title gets canceled after 12 issues.
Yeah. But then the next one comes out.
Yeah.
Well, wait a second, I think Standard Marvel has caught on to that.
Yeah. Did you like
Hawkeye? Then you'll love new Hawkeye.
Yeah.
All new now Hawkeye.
You'll love Hawkeye.
Yeah.
I would read that.
I love Hawkeye.
Oh, yeah.
Hawkeye's the best.
He's great at boots.
The ultimate line, funny. It's funny how now it's just become completely kind of superfluous. You know what I mean? Like, again, they sort of took what worked and folded that into the regular Marvel universe. And again, it sort of became the basis for some stuff in the cinematic universe. And they, you know, all kind of gelled together. So, yeah, the ultimate line did really well when it was very distinct from everything else. And now it isn't.
Now it's just
the original version of it isn't.
Now it's just crazy. Modern day Ultimate Universe. What's going on?
I think it's played out its usefulness.
Oh yeah.
And you need to just lay it to bed.
Except for the one successful part of it is
Kitty Pryde. Kitty Pryde in her white costume, right? Right? It's Kitty Pryde in her white costume?
That's it.
That's definitely it. Nailed. Yeah. Ultimate Cloak and Dagger. It's Ultimate Cloak and Dagger.
I enjoy them.
Wolverine's son?
Oh man, is that still a thing?
I don't know.
Who knows? Miles Morales, who is great, and I would never want to lose Miles Morales.
Like we mentioned at last, or one of the...
Yeah, least,
was he's now been introduced into All New X-Men.
What, like a crossover kind of thing?
At some point.
Is it out?
The new one isn't.
Oh.
That's this coming week. So we'll see if that continues that storyline. I don't know what's happening with that.
And again, like, they're making a, you know, it seems like they keep, crossing him over pretty much constantly lately, so, you know, if that's what, as long as they keep that character around, I'm cool.
You know, what's
going to happen? It would be nice to do it without him having his entire universe destroyed or something, but.
Well, my concern is that what's going to happen to him is what's happened to, the current Nomad, maybe?
Nomad.
Nomad. The Heroes Reborn Bucky. Who is in the 616 universe.
She's just sort of...
Heroes Reborn storyline thing?
Yeah, well, she came...
In the 90s?
Yeah, like, she came out of that universe totally at the end of it.
Any of that.
And it's like...
Yeah.
It's like having Wally West and Barry Allen at the same time that both can't be the Flash.
Yeah.
It's like, what's Miles gonna do? Oh, we'll give him a new costume. He's gonna be Arachno fella.
No, I think it would be interesting to introduce him as Spider-Man into the regular...
Just have there be two Spider-Mans.
Two Spider-Mans. And then it's like, then you...
This book could just be Miles Morales Spider-Man.
You've just created another... Like, you've got another character. Which
it already is. It already is. Right. It's Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man.
And then you've created that storyline of, like, how do the two of them deal with each other?
They've already met.
Well, yeah, but if it's... But dealing in the same...
They're buddies.
Now, you know, if... they're buddies. Hey, pal.
Spider buddies! I'll read it.
Let's go swing together!
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
Oh, let's go swing together.
Just have a Spider-Man ongoing series and that, you know, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
They'll just call it Swingers.
Wasn't that already a thing?
The Slingers was.
Oh, Slingers.
Slingers was, yes. And let's stop talking about that because that definitely doesn't apply to the topic at all.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
I have one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Game changer. And this, it's more just the introduction of, one particular artist and writer and how he changed one title. And I don't know if it went across the board and but it changed that character forever and everybody looks back to that creator.
Yeah, I know who you were talking about exactly.
You know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
It's what's right kind of in front of us down at the bottom there. The Mighty Thor. Being the character.
Or not Captain Britain.
Not Captain Britain.
Earlier, we'll talk more of Captain Britain, though.
Well, we can do that later.
Yes. We'll do a Captain Britain episode.
We
just,
should.
Just for Kyle.
We should do a non-USA episode.
Oh.
Like international heroes.
If this does happen, you heard it here first, fellas.
Like Sabra?
And ladies.
Sabra. You know what?
Yeah.
That was one thing I had when we were talking about ideas.
This episode is now just Sabra. Sorry, guys.
Sabra was the biggest game changer of all.
I actually know a girl named Sabra. Oddly enough.
She's a superhero?
No.
Damn.
She's not from Israel.
Well, what good is she?
I've only seen that character, and then there's a handful of other characters.
What if it's like, go to hell, real life, yeah. Sabra?
That's okay, we're not really friends.
No. not anymore.
Not anymore. Like, she's gonna listen to this. Whatever.
She's a real bitch.
Oh, no. Oh, my Jesus. God.
Anyways, yeah. Snip, snip.
So...
this is a total segue, but I was talking about doing limited series, like a show on limited series. And right. The one that kept popping into my head was Contest of Champions, which I don't know if that might have been a little early for you guys.
I'm aware of it.
I have that series, and I always had... I actually only had, like, one issue for the longest time, and I really, like, 10 years ago, maybe 15, I picked up the other two issues. It was only three issues. And it's Grandmaster, one of the Elders of the Universe, and Death. And they each, grab a bunch of heroes and each play them off each other for whatever game sort of thing.
Did you have this when you were, like, a kid?
Yeah. I was...
You had
10.
One issue of it.
Yeah.
Okay. It's sort of like My Secret Wars as a shout out to episode 1.
Yeah,
exactly. One issue of Secret Wars, and it's not, you know, it's like a big
But
crossover.
I just reread that one issue 100 times.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is, it had characters in it that I never saw up to that point, and I have never seen since.
Oh.
Sabra being one, which...
I've seen her show up.
Where... Yeah.
She showed up in like some 90s X-Men comics I read, and she doesn't show up that often, but she does occasionally.
There's a couple of them, like they have a bunch of the mainstream ones. There's like Daredevil and whoever is in that. But then there's like an Australian guy with a bull roar, not Gateway, but it's
Well, Australian, not Gateway, or the Kangaroo.
But he's like Dreamweaver or something like that, and I've never seen him before or since.
Huh.
And there's a couple other ones, like they're all like international characters.
Now, did he get you through the night?
Dreamweaver.
So that one queued up to you.
Yeah, I don't know. It's again like those like 90s like sparkly effects around whoever you're looking at.
Yeah. Okay, that was a total segue. That's an idea for like international characters. That was like, there's all these ones that are in that. Anyways, my game changer, going back to the...
That, you coming up with that topic was a game changer for this podcast.
Totally. Okay,
there we go.
Those aren't marks.
I'm
legitimately enthused.
Whatever, you're gonna cut me out. Whatever. I'm okay with that.
Things are taking a turn.
He looks at me with the big puppy dog eyes. It's okay. It's okay, little guy. Tiger.
Hey, fella.
Hey. No, it's Walt Simonson's run on Thor.
Yeah.
Which, up until that point, not that Thor didn't have the mythological feel to it. Obviously, the entire thing is based in mythology, but...
How so?
I don't get it.
No, I don't know what you mean.
No.
Are you sure you're not mistaken? Look at it, everybody.
It's a common misconception.
Oh. Hey... We're going for it.
Pretty funny. As we all take a sip of beer. But, like, up to that point, it's Stan Lee that's largely doing it. And, like, Stan Lee's got his own kind of hokey way of doing it.
Yeah,
at the same time, like, that's what comics were at the time. So that
hokey but charming.
Hokey but charming, and then there's some really good stories involved in that, but it has a certain approach. Then you get to Walt Simonson, and he has a background in history.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say he's a paleontologist, or his wife is a paleontologist. They actually have, and I'm not sure if this is true, I've never actually looked it up. If you look at his signature, it's a little dinosaur. And I think
that's my signature.
Simon, the O is a big, like it's kind of the arc of the back, and then it goes up. It's like a Brontosaurus.
He's got such a distinctive signature. I've always kind of been like, oh.
And, yeah. But I'm not sure if that's true. Somebody told me that, oh, he was a paleontologist, or his wife was a paleontologist, whatever. But like there was that background in history.
They were both paleontologists. They went to this park. Chris Claremont flew there. It's like, I've made speech bubbles that walk and talk and make more speech bubbles.
Oh god, they're taking over everything!
Then John Byrne showed up and drew a bottom lip on both of them. It was like,
We're working through some issues here.
Too many issues podcast.
Yeah.
But Simonson brought like a real historical feel to it, and like the characters, like say like Balder, was there. He was there as a character and whatever, but he totally fleshed him out and brought it, and a lot of it really rooting it in the actual Norse mythology and discovering a lot of other things like Ragnarok and then going to different realms and like going to the ice realms and Musfalen and whatever, like all these different things that had been there, maybe hints of, but he just fleshed it out to a point, both story-wise, writing-wise, and then just stylistically, his drawing is so unique,
yeah.
And it's really, really kind of took a huge turn and was a game changer for Thor. And I think for it kind of, I always think of it akin to Neil Adams suddenly drawing Batman, where I think we spoke about that.
An artist or a writer that just clicks with this one character.
It clicks with the one character, but then stylistically, the way that they draw them, like the time that Neil Adams jumped onto Batman, it was Brave and the Bold. It was Batmania. It was like, you know, everything's kind of hokey and had that sort of feel and that old 60s comic approach. And then all of a sudden, he comes in where he's got like a commercial background, a graphic art background, and a more realistic approach. And so that, like, you see that, and it's such a drastic change that it's like, wow, you could never do a gritty story in the 60s. Really, it's hard to do that when you have that hokey look, unless you're doing, like, if you look like EC Horror Comics or something, it has that sort of look to it, and you're doing a horror story.
But. Sure. No, and I can sort of see that for sure, just his specific style and the amount of kind of detail he put to it was, totally...
So, like, Neil Adams doing Batman and then Walt Simonson doing Thor, I have that same approach where it suddenly it's... He's not hyper-realistic, or not as realistic as Neil Adams, but it's much more stylistically interesting, and it's not...
If you... Not to... Yeah, but, I mean, you look at Neil Adams... And that's a really good point, because you look at Neil Adams' Batman, and did you ever really look back from that?
Well, yeah. You couldn't go back to that.
No. Stuff that was, again, like, that's it. I mean, that completely changed that...
Like that. That's totally another game changer.
He's kind of still feeling like, that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you've felt that ever since, which for the best.
To me,
really.
That's my favorite Batman.
Yeah,
Neil Adams or Jim Aparo. They both had a very similar sort of approach, but just like the costume and the kind of the shape of the head with like the black in the front.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
On the forehead to the nose, and like the length of the ears and the cape itself is just like that was.
Oh, yeah.
That's perfect for me. I love that.
Right.
You know what? I'm not huge on the Neil Adams Batman, just because I think I grew up looking at a lot of that.
Yeah.
Like old stuff. And when I saw, I would say newer stuff, even like year one, where it's like, oh, short ears and, you know, a different, it almost seemed cleaner to me, where it's like, let's just make Batman his costume as simple as possible.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that really was like, that looks like a cooler Batman, but.
Maybe it's a matter of what you grow up with, and then you get to that change, and then there's something different that's like, then it becomes yours.
Yeah. I know a lot of people who are like, Neil Adams, Batman.
Yeah.
That's the one. That's the one I gotta buy them all.
I'm gonna, while we're on the topic, for some reason, Norm Breyfogel.
I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, it sounds like a made-up name.
Yeah.
No, it's real. It might be a made-up name, but Alan Grant, Norm Breyfogel, around the time that Tim Drake...
Alfred Johosky.
Tim Drake first showed up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that sort of run there. For some reason, he's... he always pops up, like, in my head when I think of Batman.
You know,
I was really into that.
I really like Ed McGuinness. I really like his Batman.
His Batman.
How he's super bulky and just looks like every other male character.
Yeah. He's just super round. Like, it's a series of circles.
Yeah.
All through.
It's the Michelin Batman.
How to draw comics the Ed McGuinness way.
Yeah.
I like how that was a plot point at one point.
What?
Well, when it was the first Batman Superman book, or the first one that he did. Or was it Superman Batman? Or...
Yeah, that one.
Where, I think it's Hawkman and Captain Marvel are sent to stop them. Are sent to stop Batman and Superman. They beat them up and they take their clothes. And it's like, you know, Lex Luthor can't tell the difference. Everybody looks the same. That's pretty good.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, I remember that. Yeah. Did like his... Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
At the Hall of Justice.
So what other ones, not that we'll go into great depth into them, but what other ones do you think stand out as, like there's The Watchmen and...
Of course.
What else would we mention?
DKR.
Dark Knight Returns. V for Vendetta, I would say, would be somewhat of a game changer. Not as much as Watchmen, but
somewhat. Yeah. I mean, you could sort of, again, like we already said Dark Knight Returns, but Frank Miller Daredevil.
Yeah.
You know, I guess you could lump those together a little bit, but that character certainly never escaped that shadow until, I would argue, very recently.
Right.
Another
more fun.
Yeah, which, you know what, you could argue maybe we're seeing a current game changer, at least at Marvel, happening right now, where it's sort of like, there's a lot of comics there that are just like, hey, how about we just have some fun now? Yeah,
comics are fun.
Yeah, let's do that again. So, you know, maybe we're in the middle of one right now.
Mm-hmm.
One can only hope.
Another Frank Miller... game changer would be him and Chris Claremont doing Wolverine, that 4-issue limited series.
Right.
That up till then he was just part of the X-Men, and he was fleshed out, but not really fleshed out, and that introduced the whole samurai background.
He wasn't a higher evolved Wolverine.
Yeah. He was.
Oh, yeah.
He was just a He's a little brawler bastard that didn't really...
The idea that I think they flat out said of him as a failed samurai, right? Like, that's, yeah. Is that where that stemmed from?
And that's where it introduced that whole the Japanese connection and that Japanese history. And that's where it's kind of gone from ever since.
And also, I mean, you know, just Wolverine as a solo character.
Exactly. And it's...
And now Wolverine everywhere all the time.
Yeah, as a solo and team character. Yeah.
Every team. Every Do you team. Have a team? Because Wolverine wants to be on it.
Wolverine and the Every Team.
Yep.
That should be the next book.
I'm really excited for his cameo in Big Hero 6.
He's... Okay, let me...
I don't know if you're joking or not.
While we're talking about Wolverine, he's dying next month, apparently. Depending on when this
airs. Isn't that book coming out like weekly or something? Or like it's coming out real quick? Because number 2 is already out.
Oh, really?
Is it?
Yeah, I was in the comic store.
I thought it was until October.
Okay. Again, this book, by the time this podcast airs, the 4th issue might be out as far as I know. But
I just saw that Wolverine in the X-Men is becoming Spider-Man in the X-Men.
Of all the choices.
And I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't go with any other character in the X-Men. Yeah. Because, you know, Spider-Man really wants to...
Who's running the school? Who's there? I don't know. Storm? Maybe you could go with Storm. She's right there.
Yeah. I'm teaching science class. Peter Parker.
What? That's Spider-Man. They don't know. Is he going to teach class in the costume?
Yeah.
I think so.
But not wearing pants, just the top.
Gross, gross.
Awful.
Webs come from everywhere.
Ooh. Check that spider wing.
It's God. Sticky.
No, I'm out of web fluid. No, that's not what happened. You're gross, and you need to leave this school. This is a child's school. Yeah,
exactly. I want it to
the authorities are on their way.
I want that series to last one whole issue, and then it's Storm and the X-Men again. It's like, this will never happen again. I am sorry.
I apologize.
We're real sorry. Meet your new headmaster, Deadpool.
Oh, yeah.
Deadpool and the X-Men.
You know what? I'd be more interested in that than Spider-Man and the X-Men.
He does lend himself to the goofy nature of Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, what's that thing? Oh, let's fight it.
Yeah. Like, I feel like that would actually sort of work alright.
If only there were, you know, there was more space for more Deadpool books.
On the topic of game changers, I would say, and I gotta mention this when we took a little break in between there. Oh no, this is a seamless conversation. We didn't take a break.
Sometimes you have to pee.
Yeah. So, a certain era at Marvel, where you had Todd McFarlane and Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld.
Oh yeah.
Who, you know, all came and it's... Obviously, that eventually led to Image Comics, which is a massive game changer because, hey, competition now. And it sort of flung the doors open, I think, for...
That flung the doors open for a lot of minor companies. Some minor companies didn't exist at the time, but I think it really... It brought readers that were with Marvel over to another company and went, oh, it doesn't have to be just the big two.
It's not just Coke or Pepsi.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And again, like the non-big two...
I can drink Jolt Cola.
it was pretty good.
The non-big two presence has been pretty constant since then. I feel like that's, again, like that was, you know, if you're talking about industry game changers, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, just that whole, again, Image Comics, right? But the whole, like, it was definitely, it's just the style of the 90s, what that introduced into, like, superhero comics in particular, was just inescapable for a decade, and it's, you know,
there's good and there's bad. There's good game and there's changers. Bad. Like, and it's like, the 90s was a big pile of shit.
People in Portland,
but you know,
in Portland are really into pouches.
Real into them.
Marsupials. They're all marsupials.
You look as that sort of decade went on in a lot of ways, though, and it's you see, like, it just seemed like stylistically there was a lot of, like, one-upmanship sort of going on through the 90s in a way where it just, like, got more excessive and just, like, just... It was funny. I was looking up...
But I think the 90s as a decade was a decade of excess in a way.
Oh, for sure.
So that was just reflected
on
that, yeah.
It's, but I mean, you know, I happened to just, as I sort of, I mentioned before the podcast started, I, you know, went in sort of a Google warp thing, whatever, where I look up one thing, led to one thing, led to one thing, it eventually led me to Noseless Wolverine, and there was a bunch of, like, pages, like, scanned pages sort of showing, and I couldn't even read them anymore. like, I couldn't follow what was happening. Like, the art was so excessive. Like, just, the, it was just, you know what I mean? It was just from a storytelling perspective, awful.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, it was them following that, you know, just trying to follow that, like, hey, let's make this cooler and cooler. With a K and a W and cool, of course. And,
take it to the extreme!
Exactly. To the point where you cannot even read these pages anymore.
No, you know what? I think Shatterstar should have two swords on the sword.
Yeah. You know what? When did, wait, when did Marvel go bankrupt again?
Oh, oh
right. Right around that time.
That's funny. Huh. Funny. Anyway, yeah. So for better or worse, that was definitely a game changer for quite a while.
Yeah.
And again, all of them ultimately lead to, you know, they ultimately burn out and then they have to sort of reinvent themselves.
Right.
It's like, oh no, we did a bad thing. Yeah. We still need to work in this industry. Let's let's go back to the roots a little bit.
But you know what? I think that's the nature of the beast. You're working with characters that you're, it's not one person doing it, it's 100 people doing it.
Right.
Right.
Over decades and decades and decades through different times, and the cultures change and the society changes, and then it's, you're going to have to get to a point where you're like, you head one direction, okay, we can't go anymore in that direction. Got to stop, pull back, and not that it, like, it can be a fuck up, and it can be a screw up, and like, ooh, we really went off the rails here. What did we do? Or it can be like, we just,
but why,
we
why
don't know
do,
where to go.
Like, why do we fall down?
Why do we fall down?
Why do we make bad Michael Caine impressions?
Yeah, that's like, it sounds like somebody Michael else. Caine?
That's, I guess.
Why do we fall down? I was going to Sean Connery. Why do we fall down, Master Bruce? So we can pick our shelves back up again.
So we can fuck the prom queen.
Oh.
If Leave Extraordinary Gentleman hadn't driven him to retirement, that might have happened. That's,
if who? What?
If League of Extraordinary Gentlemen hadn't forced Connery into retirement, who knows?
He could have been Alfred. That's, he could have been. That's pretty fair. I like it.
Yep.
You do push-ups all the time. Can't you get that bloody log off you? Is that pretty good?
That's a really good Connery.
I kind of want you to just, like, re-record all the lines and we can just dub over them and just put that movie out there. Like, the Connery
that
cut.
Would be fun.
It's still Michael Caine in appearance.
But doing Sean Connery.
Or we can just, like, clumsily put, like, a picture of
and
him.
And every once in a while he'll go, your mother's a whore.
Now, if we could add the Batman voice being overdubbed by Kevin Conroy, that'd be great.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. He's totally the Batman.
We did it.
I
did it.
I can't, yeah.
He's a bit of a game changer.
There's the game changer. The Batman game changer right there.
Yep.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
I want to bring up one last one.
Sure.
As a game changer. We kind of during.
Dupe.
He's still around,
once again,
isn't he?
That's
long shot. No. yeah, that's a long shot. Is Neil Gaiman's Sandman. I think as a series and as a way to tell stories and do comics, and it was a game changer, but it was like a game changer for storytelling, a game changer to the industry, a game changer to beyond the industry, because it was one of the first times where it was, it was taking comics and taking them more to a higher literary standard and a higher level of storytelling and incorporating things that had never really been, like, had been just segmented pieces have been done. Like, so there's other very good standalone stories, but I think as a whole, as an arc, like, he knew what he was doing from start to finish. He knew that at the end, Sandman was going to die, and this is the whole arc we're going to do.
Spoilers.
Oh, it's horrible. That was only, like, 20 years ago.
Oh, God.
I remember even, I think it was, like, in the
I love making
grade 7 or something like that, where, like, there was somebody had, like, all the issues. It was just, it was, like,
they had so many issues.
Yeah. But they had, like, the issues of Sandman there.
Issues.
Yeah. Where,
what are my toys?
It was sort of looking at them with sort of, you know, I wasn't ready for that yet, I don't think, but it was sort of,
like, you have to be able to understand it.
It did plant something in my brain where I was just like, oh, this is interesting, like, you know, it feels kind of weird to me, but, you know what I meant, like, maybe...
Yeah, it's like looking at porn when you're, like, 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was explaining during our little break that I have all the collections of each trade and storyline or whatever for all the Sandmans, except for the last one. I have those that was at, the, got to the point where I was like, oh, I'm collecting the individual issues. And so I have the individual issues of that. But the first one that I got.
Sorry.
Sorry, what?
We just laugh. I don't know why.
Magneto.
No, I have to get them proper.
Well,
I understand.
No, it was like I had caught up because it was a time I wasn't even collecting them and I didn't even know they were, it was like past that point.
Right.
So they weren't even out anymore.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh, this, I
think, and why,
I
picked up why the wait, old, right?
Yeah. So I was like, I might as well just pick up the last ones. But the first one that I got was Season of Mist, and I was trying to explain where I got it from, and I can't even really remember. This is for all the kids out there. This is pre-internet. The internet did not really exist at this point.
It was around, but it was really bad.
This is early 90s, so it really didn't exist. Yeah. Like, I was in grade 10 or something, and...
You just wanted to play a game with your computer.
Exactly, yeah, if you even did that.
And it almost started World War III.
Bam! I'm Matthew Broderick.
I knew it!
but
I was suspected.
What's up? You killed that guy.
But it was, I
he's safer driving.
I used to order books and posters through. I think it was through a company that was called Bud Plant Inc. And it sounds really weird, but my brother and I had this for years. We would get these catalogs that you could order prints, like large posters and prints. And this is like early in the scheme of. Comic stores. Comic stores existed, but there weren't tons of them, and it wasn't mainstream at all. And you could order these things. You could order books, and this is before trades became a big thing.
Yeah, and now they're
now it's everywhere. Yeah. It's in chapters, in every bookstore you can find. But and I, for some reason, I don't know why, I really can't explain it. I ended up ordering this book, and I remember it being fairly expensive at the time. But I just ordered it on a lark. I had never read Sandman. Didn't really know that much about it. A friend of mine in high school had read a little bit of it and just talked about it, and I was like, oh, that could be cool. And so I ordered this book, and it's Season of Mist, and it's a leather-bound hardcover edition. So it was super expensive, but I got it, and it's beautiful, and it's been like a prize of my collection ever since. But that story alone just opened an entire world that I was like, oh my god, it's like reading...
Jesus.
It's like I'm reading Homer in comic form. Like, it's that sort of, like, not actually, but, you know, like, it's that higher level of literature approached into a comic form, and how do we tell that in a comic story?
Right. It's sort of thing that's left to real literature.
And really, usually you do not tell these kind of stories in these sort of ways. And, like, Gaiman even... One, I can't remember what exactly, like a World Fantasy Award or something like that. And it was the first time a comic had ever won that sort of award. And there was a huge uproar. They were like, wow, this isn't actual literature. This isn't a book. This is a comic. You can't win that. And like, they changed the rules after, and like, oh, you know, the comics can't win that anymore. But it was like, you know what? The cat's out of the bag now. Like, you acknowledged it. And it's because comics are a legitimate art form, and this was one of those game changers that was the big step of, like, including Watchmen and Dark Knight Returns and, like, that sort of thing, and in Sandman, where it was, you're taking it to that next level, and you're telling a story in a serious way, not, like, you know, we're doing a Brave and the Bold composite Batman Superman story where it's half and half. Oh, look, all the Batmans are different colors, and there's five of them now.
That's like a good Halloween costume idea. I want to be composite Superman for Halloween. Yeah.
It's pretty great.
I got all the powers of the Legion.
Yeah.
There you go.
And I'm green.
Green?
Yeah, it was green.
Wasn't Composite Batman half and half?
Well, he was half Batman. And half, but also he had green skin.
Yeah.
Did he?
Because,
yeah, he did.
Because why not? Because
why not?
That makes sense.
There was an issue of Young Justice where there was a composite Robin Superboy that had green skin because it was like a green like glob creature that like downloaded information from their computer from them and became the composite Robin Superboy, and I always like that. yeah, I mean, the 80s in general, it was a big push towards like a lot of legitimacy in a lot of ways, I think, for comics.
Yeah. It was a huge step. Like, you go from... Yeah. Like, not that the 70s didn't have a certain amount of legitimacy, but I think it was... You went from the 60s that were more... The 50s to 60s, the infancy of comics.
Yeah.
Then you get into the 70s where they're, like, getting into a stage where... Like, I think we were talking about in one of the former issues, like, the team-up one, we're talking about... Denny O'Neill...
Doing
Green Arrow.
You had some social awareness.
It's like total social awareness. Like going into racism and drug abuse and classism and all this.
Even like Spider-Man had like, you know, the Harry Osborn.
Right.
He's on some drugs now.
Yeah.
Oh, something like that.
There was the acid.
Exactly what it was. Yeah. Where they had to actually take the Comics Code Authority out.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't get code approved on that, which was, in itself, a big thing, because it's like, oh, you can do that, and oh, they didn't really, wasn't the end of the world.
Because, you know what, it was a self-imposed system.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's a whole different podcast.
Yeah.
but, yeah, then, like, 70s kind of did that, where it was more, like, social awareness and telling those kind of stories, but at the same time, they weren't at like, a high level of writing. Like, it was a high level of writing, but it didn't take that step up.
Then I mean, especially for the start,
it was a high level of comics writing. It could have been more.
Yeah. Then you get into 80s and into the early 90s where it's like, okay, you know what? This is a form of literature that's of what you would, like, quote unquote, literature sort of thing. I'm making the little apostrophes in the air.
Right.
Squeakies.
And then while we're on the 80s, before to go too long, not to, you know, You're on a train here, not to
disrupt it. No, I don't really have much else to say.
I mentioned again, you know, right now you sort of have, I'd say right now is kind of a great age for creator-owned stuff in general, but in the 80s had, like, the whole black and white boom.
Yeah.
A lot of independent and self-published comics.
Oh, were you talking a little something?
I'm definitely talking Usagi Yojimbo.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Holy crap. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Shit, I'll say it. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But Cerebus, all sorts, man.
Bone?
Bone. Oh, Bone. Yeah.
That's much later, but yeah.
It's later, yes. Yeah, but, I mean, you know, again, like the black and white sort of self-published creator-owned stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, Jeff Smith was there for that whole, you know, the comic creator's Bill of Rights sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh,
That
originated with like Eastman and Laird and all those guys. Yeah, there was like a ton of them. All like they wrote up the Comic Creators Bill of Rights in the 80s. And there were all like the big like black and white boom kind of guys together. You know, it's
like approaching Congress kind of thing. Or do you mean like Bill of Rights?
I think it was
a
Bill of Rights more in name.
Yeah, okay. It was sort of like a formal kind of like stance kind of a thing more than anything else, but. It did definitely represent
the indies.
Yeah. Stepping up and being like, hey, you know, you can't just, like sort of standing up for their own rights as creators.
And then they sold out as quickly as possible.
Oh, yeah, as you do.
Shit, you want to make a toy? Okay.
Yeah.
I actually just watched...
Hey, but at least they owned it. At least they owned their properties, you know what I mean? Some company didn't own them unless they decided to sell it.
And they didn't sell it for... Oh, like 30 years almost.
Are you talking like Eastman and Laird?
Well, I'm talking specifically.
No, they sold it like within a year. Watch the documentary.
Some rights.
Did you watch that?
Some rights, not Netflix. All rights.
Well, not all rights, but they went straight to toys.
Oh, yeah.
And everything.
But they
not
still
that
owned
was
it.
A bad idea.
Well, they owned
the
it,
first
though.
Issue
they
came
it.
Out in 84, the first cartoon episode came out in 87.
Yeah. It was
a 3-year turnaround.
That's amazing.
That's hugely fast.
Like again, like the yeah, that's just...
I'm still waiting to sell out.
Yeah. It's funny, because I think they only sold the rights over to the Nickelodeon and...
Guys, Space Spider cartoon would be great.
I'd watch it. I would.
I guessed right one episode. They would not have me back. No, they would not.
Well, maybe they'd fire you and then rehire you. You could. You could be your own Dan Harmon.
Yeah. That's a great t-shirt idea. Be your own Dan Harmon.
We'll split the proceeds. It's good.
on the back, hashtag gas leak here.
Awesome. Anyway.
Well, I think that possibly...
I think we jumped around a lot, but
yeah,
we...
Yeah, there's tons more game changers to do.
This is a nice introduction to, like, the history of comics, I
think. Yeah, well, yeah, that's...
In a way.
Yeah.
Look at your ass got learned.
Yeah.
You tell him, Lees.
Yeah, learned. No E in there. No any E's. So it's spelt L-A-R-N-D.
You got Larn.
Larn. Hashtag Larn.
We all learned a lot.
I'm just gonna shake.
Oh, God, no. So, yeah.
I am Merc. You can find me at mercasylum.ca, MERKASYLUM.ca, or Merc, or nowadays on Facebook.
I am Bri Kotick. My name is BryKotyk. Hey, why don't you type that into Google, see what you get. And my
porn.
Yeah. Don't tell anybody.
Bald porn.
The best kind.
Spelt without an E.
Yeah. And my comic is Welcome to Hereafter at welcometohereafter.com. Please read that. It would make me feel real happy.
And I'm Kyle Lees. You can check my stuff out at skiningjas.com. You look at the top and you're going to see links to all of the various things that I do. And you look right underneath those links and you're going to see some funny comics.
They're delightful. I love them.
Hey, love you, buddy.
And once again, we're going to give a nod to Ocean City Defender, who did the theme song, and a special nod to Ken, who is Ocean City Defender, because Ken is getting married next week.
Yay! Oh!
Yes. So,
by the time this aired, it already happened.
Possibly, yeah. Probably. I'm actually going to his bachelor party tomorrow night. Yeah. So, yeah, he's getting married next week. Congrats to you and the wife to be Ocean City Defenderess.
The once and future wife.
Yeah. Ocean City Defenderess, is that a word? I'm making it up now.
He's no longer defending alone.
No. I made and he also had a baby not too long ago.
Oh.
Well, he didn't have it, his wife did.
that makes more sense.
That makes more sense, because he doesn't have a vagina. So that would make the birth difficult.
I've always heard that about him.
Yeah, haven't we all?
Never seen Junior? You just get Danny DeVito to fuck you, and then you have a little penguin baby.
But I
wait.
As a little gift, I gave him like a the baby a little onesie kind of deal, and I did an iron-on print that it's Ocean City Defender is his band, and what was it called? Pond Village Protector.
Ah,
get it?
Because it's a little.
It's a little one.
It's a little tiger.
Yeah.
Hey, tiger. Rawr.
So, ultra congratulations.
Yeah.
To Ken.
And to, as a little nod, we're going to go out with a song by Ocean City Defender. This is The Nature of Things. Check out the video. I'm in the video. I'm the ghost.
He was a ghost the whole time?
Disembodied love, bitter colors through you.